with spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
Spoiler alert!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Mad Max, spoiler rep number 31. Not the 31st Mad Max. I didn't say that right.
There will be, though.
We're going to do 30 more?
There'll be 31 movies by the time they're done.
Okay. All right. That's good. Spoiler rep, ladies and gentlemen, as we always have to say, we are going to go into every aspect of this film, including the ending. So if you haven't seen this movie, you've downloaded something weird.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I don't know what you were trying to do.
Yeah, it's your fault.
I'm going to blame you.
Yeah.
Return guest to the show was on in, I think, December. December.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We were talking some Oscar movies.
Yeah.
Writer for John Oliver, back from the Big Apple, ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Avery.
Hello. How are you? How is everybody?
And also half of the podcast, Denzel Washington is the greatest actor ever.
Period.
That's right. Period. That's right.
Of all time?
I forgot for a second. The other day I said the best actor of all, and I was admonished for that. Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time, period.
Got nice. It. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which will be in this year's Los Angeles Podcast
That's
Festival.
Right.
Nice. Oh, very and, excited. You know, we have video screens, so you'll be able to show clips
for
your podcast.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
We did a live episode in New York. And which was, classically lost.
Oh, God.
The last thing I said to the guy
it's
as
so
I was
great
leaving.
You do live ones.
Yeah.
You New Yorkers are a bunch of assholes. Is that? And then it's weird that he lost the episode.
Our last live one was lost in Oklahoma City.
Yep. I mean, I knew when I heard that, I was like, we're not the only ones that this has happened. I've heard this before, like, we had some problems and, good luck to all of you. You know, like
that's always the technique.
You can't just do anything. But I asked the guy. It was as if I don't know what I was leaving, and I said, "You did record this, right?" And he's like it never occurred to me to talk to like he'd been prepped and everything. He knew what to do, but I was like, "You recorded it, right?" He's like, "Oh yeah." And then the next thing I knew, the old corrupt file.
Ooh,
yes.
Yeah. That only happens in live venues for some reason.
Yeah.
Only happens in a live venue.
It's the creative differences of, I think, podcasting. The sort of like, I don't know, it was corrupt. I don't know what that means.
Right.
I don't, but it's that sort of mysterious, for some reason, we just don't have it.
I know. The thing, and I've said this before, and then I was so mad that I didn't follow through on it when we went to Oklahoma City. I've even said this to Doug Benson, who's lost episodes. Just bring a Zoom and just put it on stage
as a backup.
Yeah.
And we didn't in Oklahoma City and lost that episode.
Yeah, that is a damn good idea. I was thinking this. I was like, oh, maybe I should have just.
I'm telling you, and I say this, I'm not. I say
we do it at the festival now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have two. We have.
So when we lose your episode at the festival,
okay.
We'll have a Zoom backup of
good to know. Appreciate that. Yeah. I'm excited to lose that episode. It's
going to
be fun.
Get your tickets to watch a lost episode, guys. Yeah. LAPodFest.com.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's how was the...
So technically, it'd be a pre-lost episode.
What?
So you get to see it before it's lost.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But only if you're there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's right.
Yeah, it's marketing.
It's like a ghost episode.
Exactly.
Okay. Only a handful of people saw it.
But now there's a big mystique around it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did you hear about that lost episode? We were there for the pre-losing.
So we intentionally lose episodes?
Yeah.
Yes.
To
that's
drive
exactly
it up.
What I'm saying.
Yeah. Drive up the interest.
And then say, we found it.
You guys. Think of the shit we could say happened at these episodes that no one would be able to, you know.
Yeah, Tom Hanks punched Daryl Hannah in the face or something like, this is...
While she was wearing the mermaid outfit.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It got weird. She brought up some old shit.
That story may exist.
That was... wow. Chris with some lore.
Yeah.
Small Hollywood.
I'm just saying, it sounds feasible to me.
Okay.
All right.
You did not know that about Tom Hanks, that he was a mermaid hitter.
No. It's specifically about Daryl Hannah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Breaking news on Spoiler Rep 31, guys. I don't know what Chris is on.
If you want to make up lore as well, go to the message boards.
Start a Daryl Hannah lore thread on our message boards that have the most outlandish shit. and we'll read the best one
yeah,
next week.
Yeah, make up the craziest non-true story about Daryl Hannah and we'll read it on the air.
God. Yeah, my brain literally does not know how to process that. You know when you hear something and you go, oh yeah, I can kind of see that. My brain's like, no, I don't know. Yeah. I don't have any of the pieces available to put yeah. that story together and go, oh,
I remember Paul F. Tompkins at our, we had a group of Philly comics. He sometimes they would spread weird stories around, like Sidney Poitier was the son of the actor in Three Stooges that went, this house done gone crazy. And for a second, everyone kind of believed it.
That's amazing. Well,
I love that.
Why wouldn't you believe it, I guess? Yeah, I mean, like, that's one of those things you stop and go, what? I mean, I guess. I don't have enough information to suss this out.
It's one of those things you just hear it and go, wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
Then you say it to someone else, hey, did you know that Paul F. Compton
and then someone goes, yeah, I heard that. And then,
they're lying.
Yeah.
Wow.
And either they're lying or they like just hung out with Paul.
That's
true. Yeah. Or it was true the whole time.
Right.
No, I went to high school as Sydney's kid, so he told me.
See, I almost believed you right there. Right, sold that.
It was close.
Yeah.
It's the mark of a good con is details.
Yeah.
If you throw in stuff like that. No, Sidney Poitier's stepson dated a friend of mine in high school, and she told me the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and there's no way to track that.
There's no way to track. There's no Google you can do on that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you can't look
it
up at all.
It has enough details that you go, well, how would he, why would he make all that up?
My theory is that the most gullible people, though, are the best liars. Because
they sound sincere.
Well, I think the attitude you have to lie is, well, why would I make this up? And then you can believe whatever you're saying. Yeah,
I'm too dumb to make this up.
Yeah, but I feel like I can be very gullible because a person's telling me something, I go, well, that seems silly to. Why would they make that up? All right, I'm just going to take that. If it's not weird enough, I mean, you tell me Tom Hanks is smacking around Daryl Hannah, I'm going to go do some research.
Outfit.
In the mermaid outfit, yeah. I'm going to look that up. But you tell me that Sidney Poitier is the son of this guy, I'm just going to be like, it sounds feasible to me. All right, let's.
Who knew?
Yeah, you know, but that means I feel like I am a good liar in that way because I could say something that's just yeah,
right.
Sure,
yeah, he wouldn't lie.
Yeah, look at his face; he's not lying.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the movie, gentlemen.
No, let's go on more weird Sidney Poitier theories.
So Mad Max Fury Road, dear Lord, we were talking about it on the regular episode. Like I said, this is like this was having adrenaline poured into your eyes for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed this film. Now I can finally talk about like the ending and some of the stuff. Like the one thing
you and I liked it.
But definitely really
liked
it.
I loved it.
Yeah, I really liked it.
Here we go.
And one of the reasons I think like the problems I had with the film was because I liked it so much I wanted to see more. Like I wanted to see what Gasoline Town looked like. I wanted to see what the bullet farm looked like. And I wanted to see, the one thing that did bother me a little bit is I wanted to see more Mad Max. Like he was a passenger for a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, in a weird thing, you know, face mask where he couldn't talk. I'm like, I want to hear him talk. And, you know, I loved seeing like his nightmares and stuff at the beginning. Like we're really going to get into this character. And then it kind of shifted to Charlize Theron's character for a large portion of the film until the end where.
It's her movie.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It felt like really her story,
yes,
you know, and starring Mad Max co-starring it just, which I was fine with because they were both very compelling characters and very interesting,
right?
And you know, I was like, yeah, when's Tom Hardy gonna get that thing off his face? But I was kind of like,
and then
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. And now when's he gonna talk after he has it off?
That was but they managed to find a mask that still looked really cool,
right
like it wasn't,
it did
a problem.
Make you go, oh, Bane.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, because normally, a lot of times you see people with their faces covered up, or, you know, like The Fugitive was a movie where Harrison Ford's walking around with that beard, and then he shaves it off, and you're like, now we're seeing Harrison Ford, you know? And this was a thing where it's like, if he wants to keep that thing on his face, I guess I'm fine with it. It's still.
In this insane world.
I'm not even sure how he got it off, too. Like, you just kind of saw him of like, you know, banging at it with the screwdriver in the back.
It was like, weird. It was like, yeah, he's got like a Phillips head back there.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just
get a click. And he just got it.
And let's address the fact that this was made by a 70-year-old director. I mean, how many 70-year-olds have those fucking images in their heads right now of that movie? That's unbelievable.
Well,
the vision and just the world that he created. I mean, granted, this Mad Max World has existed for a while, but just there's some crazy shit in this movie.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I loved about it is that, like I was saying, this is what I learned about Star Wars, that George Lucas created a world. Mm-hmm. And as the more I watch this movie, the more little things, like the guy, when they come back to the Citadel?
Yeah.
The Citadel is
that guy his pops home base. The guy pops up out of the sand. Just this dude just popping out of the, and I guess, people live in the. There's some people who live in the ground.
That's how they stay cool.
Yeah, and I realized there are so many of those types of things that you saw. He created this entire sort of world that was interesting without Mad Max, interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
The crazy thing is, like, the start of the movie, the lead character is captured. Mm-hmm. That's how the movie starts, yeah. Right?
Well, right after the voiceover that gets you up to speed if you haven't seen the other three movies.
Right. Yeah. Yep, I was a cop, I lost my family, I'm tormented by it.
You know, I let a bunch of people down and couldn't save them. All right, and now I'm having horrible nightmares. Go.
Right.
Yeah. Are we done with the exposition?
Yeah.
Moving on. Good. Let's go.
Literally, that was it.
Like, literally 40 seconds of exposition.
And it was a very, very specific effort. I'm going to get it all up done at the top of the movie, and mm-hmm. I'm going to be done. And that was it.
So then the introduction to the Citadel, which I thought was a really cool way to introduce it, is it's a fight. He's a chase scene through it. So we just in 2 minutes, we see, this is hell.
Yeah. Right.
Like you see the breast milk ladies.
Yeah. Yeah. They're being hard. Yeah. They're being farmed.
Like this movie was uncomfortable to watch. In a good way, mm-hmm. in the sense that you went, oh God, yeah, when everything collapses, and we're close to that happening, this is what is going, this is how it's going to shake out. Like, and water is going to be, everyone talks about it 100 years from now, that's what we're going to be fighting over.
Yep, yeah, and people are going to have goiters on their necks and giant feet. It's going to happen.
Oh God. At the end of that movie could have just been Mad Max pointing the screen like, see you in 10 years, everybody. Yeah. You know, just like, oh, thanks. Thanks, Max. You bummed us out.
You use water to control people. You saw, he runs through the, he's got this greenery, so he's growing all these vegetables. Right. He could be feeding everybody and be this benevolent leader. Nope.
Well, it's also interesting. He clearly has a shit ton of water because he goes, he's like, I'm going to pour, just pour a bunch
into the ground.
Masses for a little bit, and then I'm going to keep the. So I was watching that going, how much water does that guy have that he could release a bunch?
This is a good point you bring up because one of our fans. On a message board, wrote that. Let me read this. That was one of his qualms with the film. Was he goes? I know everyone is raving about the film, but I struggle with this movie. Visually, it was stunning, but the plot was contrived and hard to reconcile. There were too many logistical questions that I struggled with to make this world a reality. Like, how do socially starved misfits with barely any education manage to keep all their vehicles running? Let alone a viable petroleum industry running. There is no explanation for how all the people in the Citadel stay alive or any other desert groove. If water is so precious, this is in all caps, why do they dump it onto the ground? Yeah. And then there was the ridiculous dust storm tornado, which seemed to have some mystical event horizon, which when crossed, you could pick up your vehicle and toss it 5 feet away, you were fine.
So that's from Die Hard Skier.
Die Hard Skier is our message.
Now, I want to address this because, first of all, that's a great post because you're civilly presenting an alternative point of view, and that's what we want the message boards to be.
And I will say this about this movie, too, and we said it in the regular episode. I love this movie, and I totally get every single reason why someone wouldn't like it.
Yes. Yeah. This you know what I mean?
Like, people who don't like The Dark Knight, those people are dumb. Their brains are stupid. they should all be euthanized for heresy. That's okay. And that's fun. Sure. I would starve them for water and make them all have goiters. Yeah. Now, that's a realistic.
Makes sense to me. Makes sense to me.
And Sidney Poitier I went to high school with him.
Oh, man. Sidney Poitier gave us a ride here.
Oh, yeah. Well, mm-hmm. That's right. He Ubers now.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Imagine. Well, you know, I just gotta. I'm not doing movies these days.
Hey, Mr. Tibbs. Please give me 5 stars. Yes.
So this is the kind of movie that, you know, I could totally see the opposing point of view because you're either on board or you're not. Within the first 10 minutes, nothing after that is going to convince you one way or the other. Because it doesn't. This movie never takes any kind of shifts one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what I liked about it. It's a definitely, it's an even tone. Yeah. It's a, even like the pacing is the same. Like, there's no, there's surprises story-wise and plot-wise and mm-hmm. visually, but there's not like, the movie never takes that left turn where you go, oh, I was on board until now. It's not, it's not the way it is. And it's also, like, it doesn't take that turn where, you know, I wasn't sure about the beginning, but now I'm on board. It doesn't do that either. Yeah. You're on board or you're not, and I really think this is the kind of movie, like you were saying, it's going to polarize you, and I really think it needs that really, really generous dose of suspension of disbelief. Like, really, you got to kind of throw everything out the window and just kind of enjoy the ride that basically you're on. Because you could literally, with a movie like this, nitpick every single frame. Because there's like, well, how did he survive that crash?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have. Obviously, he wouldn't have. If you're tumbling over in a car and there's also some kind of weird post-apocalyptic tornado next to you, chances are you're not going to survive.
You're gonna,
I mean, and the guy you're chained to, probably not going to survive either. So, so you got to just kind of let all that go.
I mean, I with all those things that this person is talking about, I kind of went, oh, maybe it's because of that. Like, my feeling was that...
Oh, you actually rationalized everything?
I can kind of go... Well, because the storm is a perfect example. At some point, I was like, wait, what's the lightning? What's happening? There's all this electricity mm-hmm. in the air and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought... And I went, electrical storm? Like, I don't know anything about a sandstorm and what it can do. Sure. So I was like, okay, this sandstorm, oh, maybe it's some kind of electrical thing. I don't know. But I just kind of went... Who cares? Because look at that sandstone. You know, like, it looked so good. But I did think,
and it would tear your skin off, really, if the sand was going. Yeah, back
I was fine with it. I was fine with it because I was just like,
you'd be fucked if you were.
Yeah, because they referenced the fact that there was some sort of atomic something.
Yeah, happened. Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah.
So I was like, oh, great, that's mm-hmm. the cure-all post-apocalyptic.
Right.
But post nuke, who knows what the weather's going to be like?
You're going to get giant ants at one point.
We don't. I cannot wait to see Mad Max riding a giant ant in the next movie. That's the thing. You kind of don't know what nature is now and what it's cooked up since, you know, after the apocalypse. So maybe that's a thing. But I thought to the story, the idea that there was a gas coming from somewhere and my feeling was someone does have all this shit. Someone is hoarding it. Someone, you know, and so, I don't know where the gas came from, but that to me was sort of another element of the story that we just didn't get into, is that this person, somebody has all this stuff somewhere.
Well, it looks like it was set up, and, you know, this is a bit of speculation, but I think the way it was trying to be set up is like, there are clans, and mm-hmm. each one is responsible for a certain thing. Like, this is the, you know, the bullet farm, so this clan. And each one of them had, like, a different look, and their cars looked different, too.
That was great.
So then you have, you know, the petroleum.
The guy playing guitar.
Oh, my God, my
that
favorite.
That was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
My favorite weapon ever from now on, a guitar that shoots flames.
And he's just, and like, mount up. That's his job. That's your job. You have one job, and that's to blare rock and roll music while we drive across the desert for days.
Yes.
My theory about that guy is he...
he started off as a drummer, and then... And then eventually you get promoted.
I'm tired of playing bongos in the back of the goddamn bus.
It would be great if one guy's on a triangle. Yeah. Someday, I'm going to get guitar. But my theory is that character... First, there are two things. I feel like he just went, oh yeah, you think we can't get any crazier? We got a guy with a guitar with flames shooting out of it.
Yeah.
But I also feel like that guy represented the audience in a way that... It put you in the movie, like, you're just looking around like, this is awesome. Like, if we all had guitars in the audience, we'd just be, we'd just be wailing. Like, that's what that movie made you want to do, is just
sit up on your chair and just go, fuck yeah!
This is awesome! Yeah. Like, for 2 hours, I just wanted to be, I don't even play guitar.
Right. It's like, and then who gets to drive, like, the concert truck? You know, it's like, they decide, like, all right, you're in the interceptor truck, you're in the concert truck, you're in the fuel truck, and they just have different roles for every truck. All right, you know, porta potty truck, you're next.
Well, here's the thing, I want to get back to what what Die Hard Skier said, which is, The crazy storm, I was like, I don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. This is a future atomic blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
The petroleum thing, I kind of felt the same thing. Like, the petroleum in the water, I was like, because they made an allusion. What was his name? And the bad guy was called Immortan Joe, right?
Immortan Joe.
Immortan Joe. Great. So they're like, oh, he had found some water well. So
well, that better than Johnny Post Apocalypticus.
Yeah.
Steve Drought.
Steve Drought.
That's probably someone's real name right now. Like,
God damn it.
Steve Drought, post-apocalyptic detective. Sounds like a ball, like a pitcher.
Right. Yeah, who played for the Angels in the early 80s. Steve Drought. He pitched a whole game on acid. Did you know that, Steve Drought? Pitched a whole game on acid. Was wearing women's underwear. Struck out the side. Unbelievable. Steve Drought.
And then he built a concert van.
Yeah. Then he drove to Burning Man. So I bought that, like what you were saying, Kevin. I was like, yeah, someone got a hold of this when shit was starting to go down. They went, okay, my militia guys or my ex Navy SEAL guys or whatever, we're grabbing this.
And there was there's a tenuous truce because each person trades and has what
needs
the other person wants.
Yeah. Needs the other one.
And I wanted to see more of that. That's the one thing I wanted to see more.
That was interesting. What I did do that when they stop in the desert and the supermodels.
Yeah.
Literally, one of those girls is a Victoria's Secret.
Yeah.
And the other one's Lisa Bonet's daughter.
Yeah.
So the other one was just beautiful. When they were hosing each other down, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You guys are just splashing water around, and that's my.
See, now I bought that.
Why would I?
I bought that completely.
It's a general pet peeve I have with post-apocalyptic movies.
Here, I'm going to tell you why.
Okay,
This is why I bought it is because those harem girls actually have been leading a sheltered and cloistered life because they're the wives that are put away. So they're used to being bathed and having water on. For them, they don't understand that there's a lack of water for everyone else or anything like that. So they would actually splash it on themselves.
Okay. Except that. Charlize Theron would be like, whoa, what are you doing?
Exactly. Okay. That's my point.
That I'll buy.
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, slow down.
Exactly.
We need this water.
Our girls use everything. No one's getting a milk bag.
That would be funny if she went, girls.
Yes, girls.
We need that water.
But then the same thing. And then Tom Hardy goes, fuck, that's water. And he's just splashing the hose around. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, he's got to get it through the mask.
Right, but he'd be like pouring in jugs. I mean, like he would fill up canteens or what, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that's I remember this is a Denzel Washington movie.
Sure.
Book of Eli. Mm-hmm. They do that whole thing, water, and everyone's lining up, and then they're just splashing around the ladle like a goddamn fucking all-you-can-eat buffet.
Like a supermodel.
Yes, like a supermodel buffet.
What are you, a bunch of supermodels? Throwing that off. But, I mean, well, that whole scene in and of itself was so bizarre and
how
surreal.
Else are you going to have slow motion camera work with wet women on? It's the only way you could get to that scene.
I know.
That's it. Post-apocalyptic or not, that's it. That's the only way you can do it.
But I feel that scene, it kind of went to something else about the movie that I thought he was trying to do, which was take everything we've kind of seen in an action movie and kind of make it fit, kind of make it okay in the context of the movie. In other words, so he comes around the truck, you know, five or six supermodels there. It couldn't have been more like in any other movie. You would have been like, "F you, this is the." Remember in the Transformers when Megan Fox is lifting up the hood of the car.
It was so ridiculous.
She's working on there's a thing. It's a plot point. Well, I got to fix this car. And yet it was still everything was just too much. Right. To
it was
see
like
at the
she
top.
Was,
and
she was washing the car. That's
yeah,
what it was.
That's what it was. Exactly. And I was like, it took me out of the movie. I mean, granted, me and every other guy in the theater, we were all kind of like, okay, it kind of got weird. Actually, I could feel the energy in the room. Like, wow. Okay, now what are we supposed to do now?
Do we need to just whack off?
I guess he wants us to just jerk off in the theater. Right? Is that okay? The movie is telling us to, but it was...
The movie made me do it.
Yeah. But in that movie, it was a scene that I always remember, this is dumb. This is just that kind of over the top thing. And I feel like here he was taking something like that and going, I'm just going to make it work. Because somehow I kind of rolled my eyes for a second, and then I was like, I mean, all right. It just, because there's so much over the top to the point where I was talking to Baron Vaughn last night, and he was saying, yeah, there was so much, it became sort of just art.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, and I think it goes to what we talked about.
No one would have had that vision other than George Miller to put all those pieces together. And also, we were talking about not a lot of CG. He literally put those pieces together from actual pieces. We saw those cars and stuff. We saw they were exist. They were real until he blew them up.
The stuntmen, I mean,
yeah,
what those guys and men and women did is unbelievable. But I want to address what you're talking about. When we all talked about the beginning of the movie, how the Citadel, how he created this world, and everyone had the guys in the all white were just sort of just like
they had jobs.
Yeah.
The teenage workers, like everyone had a job.
And a goiter.
So when you did see five supermodels hosing themselves down, it was set up enough correctly. This is an interesting, like, from a script structure wise, they set it up. What is she transporting? Why is she suddenly deviating from the plan? Oh, it's these girls. And then it was all explained so quickly. He's in the room where they're kept. And there's all that graffiti. He's like, you don't own us, our bodies, ourselves, or whatever it said in there. Uh-huh. So it was all like, it all made sense.
Yeah.
Yes, it's gratuitous hot ladies, which I'm sure the studio went perfect.
Yeah. But I think it was also his wink a little bit to like, but then we're going to make this work.
But it made sense. Yeah. Because
especially when they're wearing medieval chastity belts.
Right, exactly.
Which
were horrifying.
Yeah.
But again, Immorticus Joe or whatever, post-apocalyptic Pete or whatever, was
Johnny Post-Apocalypticus.
Johnny Post-Apocalypticus.
Sandstorm Sam.
I saw that and went, it made sense to me because I was like, God, this guy, of course he's so evil. He keeps the five most beautiful women in this post-apocalyptic world and pampers them and fucking
and
rapes
he's clearly
them.
Dying.
He's dying and he's putting his horrifying babies in them.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God. Oh, it's nice. I get to see some beautiful women. But I also just went, Jesus, this fucking world. And then went, wow, George Miller's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, none of those characters, I think they all had a moment to kind of shine or kick ass or whatever. And none of them sat around being damsels in distress. Mm-mm. They all kind of, I mean, they had their moment where a lot of them were like, oh, what's going on? But I think once shit really kicked into gear, so did they. I mean, it was really cool to watch him.
It was so great, too, how one of them was just like, fuck this. I want to go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're getting shanghaied. We had it great.
Yeah, yeah,
you know? And the other ones were like, and again, my question going into this movie was, how are you going to do exposition and character arc?
Yeah, it can't be like Black Hawk Down.
No, like, come on.
You know, where it's just one big fight.
But no, those women in the back of the cab filled you in on every story. They're like, oh, he's been doing this.
And even Nicholas Holt's character, who kind of, you know, turned around and became a hero.
Great.
I thought it was interesting. Like, when you're watching his character, because you don't know what George Miller is going to do, and because he'll play around with the conventions of filmmaking, you think like, all right, well, this character is going to die here. No, he's going to die here. Is he going to turn here? Mm-hmm. Like it actually, as straightforward as the story ended up being for that character, you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And that was part of the world of like, so many times I went, well, yeah, and this post-apocalyptic, it's just about survival. So it is like, you're my enemy, you're my friend, you're my friend, you're my enemy.
Yeah.
Like at this moment right now, I'm going to kill you.
Well, that was also kind of a cool thing between Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron and Hathaway. there was not a concrete moment where they decide, all right, I guess we're in this together. They just were moving along and they realized, well, I need you to shoot this guy behind me, or I need you to drive the truck. Mm-hmm. It just happened and developed very organically.
Naturally, yeah.
It was so great because, and this is why I thought it was it's one of the most amazing things about it. The action I can't think of a movie that has done this, or at least it's escaping me right now, where the action was not just tacked on, let's make it blow up. Because I feel like so many directors go, they just get this hard on for this action scene.
Yeah.
And they don't care how it really, it kind of fits the
story.
How
does it play out? Yeah.
This, the action drove their relationship developing.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I
you
mean,
know what I mean?
I like, think it, I think you
which
have,
was awesome.
I think you have an advantage built in because literally it's a chase scene because so you have right. two characters in close proximity. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to get them to become closer emotionally together, especially when you know you're constantly being chased by the same people over and over again. So I think they had that advantage, but it could have been handled poorly, and it wasn't. Oh, yeah. I thought it was handled well.
It would have been handled poorly if they would have put it. I'm so glad it had so little dialogue. If they would have had it like, "You and I, kid, let's do
yeah.
this."
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was also times too where I thought, I don't know if you guys like. It was either an accent or they're using post-apocalyptic lingo where I kind of missed a couple lines of dialogue here and there.
Which made me go, I got to see this again because it's sort of like Australian. It's kind of like what they did in Blade Runner, how he – remember he talked about – Deckard talked about, you know, there's this language in the streets of L.A. that's like Vietnamese and Spanish and, mm-hmm. And sort of – it's sort of weird developed. That's what would happen in wherever the fuck was. You know, and
well, there's a sequence like that on Cloud Atlas too. Mm-hmm. Remember that where so you're not really sure. Like there was a couple times between that, you know, the post-apocalyptic newspeak or whatever, and and the accent. Sometimes I was like, wait, what did they just say?
Yeah, but you know, and I liked Cloud Atlas. I was able to enjoy it, but
no, we liked it too.
I still, in moments like that, I did feel like, wait, what are they like? I didn't like that I couldn't understand what they were saying. Right, there was something about that movie that I was like, okay, I need to. It was so confusing that I needed to at least know exactly what they were saying at all times.
Yeah.
Here, I could watch the movie and just go, well, I'm sure I'm going to figure it's all going to
make sense.
It's all coming together somehow. You don't need to, you know.
Let's go into this. So the ending and what leads up to the ending. So the ending. Really, like, by the end of it, I was like, oh, this is Charlize Theron's movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's as...
at Act 3, basically, they turned around.
Yeah.
You know, and they went back.
Which was great when the Green Zone was dead.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the Green Zone or whatever was all run by women. Like, that was the other thing. Was like, wow. George Miller, from what I saw, you guys tell me what you think, was clearly like, men who control everything, water, mm-hmm. power, and guns, are destroying this earth, and women got to save it.
Well, I don't think that was at all subtle, especially.
No, no, I mean, it was very clear. There's people online going, it's a feminist agenda.
It was even in the dialogue, like, who killed the world?
Men
you know, when
did.
He's yelling yeah, at, no, you know, true, the yeah. one guy. So it's very clear.
And look at the women. All the women are... heroes in this,
yeah.
They're older.
Those
badass women.
Were, yeah.
Well, they were there or property. That's
right.
The other
right
thing. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. When they get to when Charlize finds her people again, they could have very easily made it another bunch of young hot women who you know it could. But it was these older women who were wiser, smarter, had been around, and knew how to kick ass.
Right.
And it wasn't out of the blue. I bought every bit of action that, you know.
And they were dwindling. Their numbers were getting a lot smaller,
And they were just like, save bullets, one shot in the head, or whatever. Yeah. It was like, these older women show up on motorcycles, and they're all deadly shots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, you know what? Yeah, if you made it into your 60s in that world...
Yeah, you would have to be a pretty good shot.
Guess what? You knew how to do that.
But here's the interesting thing to what you said about how, like, you know, it was clear that it was very, like, men who had been running things destroyed everything. But until you said that just now, when you said it, I went, oh, yeah, that's right. And it made perfect sense, and I got it. But I don't think... It just wasn't hammered over the head. You know, he was able to say all these things and put that, but you didn't feel preached to. It didn't feel overly like, I have a message, everybody. You know, it just felt, it was woven into the plot. It worked so well. And you came out, you know, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't overdone. It wasn't preachy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It was so cool. And then, you know, the ending of the movie. So.
I liked when he walked away.
It was so great. He walks away. And again. Yeah. This great nonverbal moment.
Mm-hmm.
She's way up high again. She's above, literally above. She has ascended to the throne of the Citadel. Mm-hmm. She is now running it. He's not at her side. They're not this royal couple running it. he's in the crowd.
That's such a great shot.
And he just looks up and they make eye contact and he just nods and she nods. That's it. And she doesn't go, oh, hang on, where's my love? I mean, no, she's...
And
she's,
really, yeah. And that's, I'll tell you, that whole sequence towards basically act three is when he kind of comes alive, when he doesn't go with them at first on the motorcycles. Yeah. And he's haunted again. You let us all down. You didn't help us. And that's where he finally kind of makes a decision and, mm-hmm. and takes
I'm
going to
say this real quick. The CG that was in there with the young girl, whoever was haunting him,
yeah. mm-hmm.
how she would turn, her face would
yeah,
change.
Yeah,
that was really yeah. awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's interesting. I saw a couple CG moments that were like where you wouldn't expect them. Like the cars weren't CG, but the birds flying overhead seemed to be like yeah, oh, that yeah. kind of like, 'cause they're mm-hmm. in like sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously a two-headed lizard.
That was probably great.
Yes. Yeah. but I'll say that it was one of the things I wanted to see more of. It was like him being haunted, making that decision, going back to helping everyone, and then pretty much driving act three. Like I wanted to see more active Max in the beginning of the movie.
Uh-huh.
But again, that's just because I wanted to see more of everything. And because Tom Hardy did a really good job. I wanted to see him do more, see him talk more, just be yeah. in the movie more. And I'm hoping they'll make, they probably will, I would think. This movie's doing pretty well. There'll probably be another one.
Well, it's obvious. Bullet Town comes over and tries to attack the Citadel.
Or yeah. attacks Gas Town.
Yeah, Bullet and Gas Town fight it out, and the Citadel is going to lose their water and... Guess who comes back?
There's plenty of places you can go.
I don't know, though, because I don't think Mad Max goes back. I think he just keeps moving. He's a guy in a straight line.
Yeah,
so, no, I like can't imagine what the next one would be.
He's like the Incredible Hulk with a car.
And he just
really,
finds
he just
another
keeps going.
With a car. Yeah, why didn't he ever buy it? He could make some money.
Yeah,
get a little beater.
Yeah, or just a green charger.
Yep. Get a moped.
Yeah. Although I was a little surprised at the beginning because Mad Max, obviously he knows cars, he knows the world. Why wasn't his car faster at the beginning? He got overtaken pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But that's, you know, minor points. But
everyone's
got to
get a tune-up now.
Yeah, yeah. And but I loved just those opening shots of the movie. You hear the engine roar. You see the mm-hmm. close-ups of these souped up post-apocalyptic cars.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, it was adrenaline.
It was so nuts. I want to go back to the thing that you said about you wanted to see more Mad Max. Sitting here now, logically, I go, yeah, I would like to see him. During the movie, I kept going, wow, when is he going to get involved?
Mm-hmm.
But not from a like, what the fuck are they doing? But I was like, but every time I'd ask that, then I would just get more engaged with, like, what the fuck is Charlize Theron doing? What?
Yeah.
What is she? What is she up to? What is going on? And which to me is a testament to how engaging it was, how great she was, how great the writing was, to where I was like, oh, that's right. The name of this movie is called Mad Max.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? And normally that is something I would slam a movie for. Like, mm-hmm. what the fuck?
Like Godzilla.
Like Godzilla, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know? Oh, God, I looked so in pain.
Oh, man. Well, I'll say this, though. Tom Hardy, kind of the master of being super engaging while not doing very much
Dude,
at all.
He is...
Except when he's trying to take off a mask.
I mean,
that looked weird.
Honestly, watch...
Because he kept doing it.
We talked about in the other episode, watch Locke.
Locke, mm-hmm. yes.
Watch Locke, and watch that other movie. God, I just blanked on it. I saw it where with James Gandolfini's last film.
Oh, yes. The Drop.
The Drop.
That's
watch
it's amazing.
Those two movies. The Drop, he's one of these just like quiet, unassuming, work behind a bar guys. And he said... I mean, he's one of those guys, like any acting teacher on the face of the earth... should be like, watch this dude, how much he conveys with saying nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene I in his eyes in Dark Knight Rises, where at the end of the movie where Talia, you know, she's like, you know, you got to, whatever she says, you got to stay back. And you see in his eyes like, oh, he did this all for her.
Yeah.
He loves her. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And you're just like, oh God, he did it with a fucking mask on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he is just so amazing. I was just watching this film going, I don't know who else could have done this.
Well, him tied to that pole, riding along and watching yeah. things happen around him.
Right.
That, to me, was a Tom Hardy action scene right there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look at him go.
Yeah.
Oh, he's looking left. Oh, he's looking right.
And you know he was tied to that pole, driven around, too.
Yeah.
That's what's like, oh, my, he actually did that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, But the other thing is, because I see what you're saying. Yeah, you kind of wanted more Mad Max, but that scene where he's trying to escape at the beginning and he doesn't is. Oh, it's so intense, and it's such an...
That chasing through
but
those...
That's what I'm talking about.
Ugly, ugly chasing.
But that's what I'm talking about. I wanted to see more of that, even if he failed. Mm-hmm. Like, he was being very active and trying to get away. It was a great sequence.
Yeah, fight choreography was fucking insane.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was just clumsy, and it was the perfect mix of cool and clumsy at the same time.
Right.
Like, he does some crazy parkour move.
You could feel the desperation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was... And it was so... Like...
Even the guys chasing him, you felt that desperation. Like, we better catch this guy, or we're gonna get killed.
Because my body physically right now is like ramped up and intense thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the theater, I mean, I was like grabbing the armrest the whole time, going, "Holy shit!" You know what I mean? It was so amazing. And that scene was like. Felt like you said, there was cool parkour, like, oh, he's had some fight training, but this is also post-apocalyptic. They're going to eat you.
Yeah,
right.
Like, they're going to fucking, they're keeping you to drain your blood.
Yeah, they're branding you now, but that doesn't mean you're going to be surviving for much longer. Yeah.
They're like, oh, he's got good blood. So like, this is what these scavengers do, is they drain your healthy blood.
That was
fucking horrifying.
Use everything.
You know. Yep. Yeah, even while they're driving you around, they were draining his blood.
That was pretty amazing.
When they had him strapped up, and then I saw that there was a bloodline through the chains, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That is brilliant and horrifying.
It was creepy.
It was so creepy.
Look at.
It was just like, oh fuck. Like, and the thing that, to me, that made it so creepy, I was like, yeah, this is probably what it's going to be.
Blood's
like.
Going to be a commodity.
You know?
Oh God.
Fresh blood. Water and virgins and oil and guns.
That's son of a
USA.
Yeah. USA. A brilliant title of somebody's classic
album.
Rock album. Blood and water and oil and sex and women and guns.
Yeah.
It's got to be a Huey Lewis in the News album.
Sure.
Didn't Eddie Money cover that?
Yeah.
Song? Pretty much.
So. Yeah, I saw it with a female friend of mine, and she went, I've never seen a movie where a woman lead, like, kicked that much ass, and women did the majority of the ass kicking and were the heroes. She goes, I don't know that I've ever seen a movie that did that so effectively. And I just thought, the thing I was asking...
Sucker punch.
But that was unwatchable. That was, yeah. I remember. I was like, sucker, why do I remember?
That's why you don't remember.
Sucker Punch looked great. Yeah.
It looked cool.
I want to go back and watch that again. Yeah, I remember.
But Sucker Punch, I remember when we reviewed Sucker Punch, a lot of us guys were like, it fell apart. And women really resonated with it. And we had numerous emails and postings about why women were like, no, that movie was cool because it showed these women fought. And it was like, that was really intense. So to see that reaction from a woman about Mad Max, you know, love the action, love all the other stuff, I was like, man, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And that was the question I had. How was that script 15 pages or was it 400 with all the action scenes written out? Like, how? Because the dialogue wise.
There wasn't a lot of dialogue in the film.
That's the one thing I was like, they're not talking much at all.
At all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it all just like he looks at her, knowing glance? This is when they did. Like, did they just.
How many times do you think that pass got blown up and redug out? Like, they kept seeming to drive through it, blow it up. and then dig it out again.
And that was cool. And then this, the guys on the motor, dreadlocky predator dirtbag guys that ran the pass,
like the Tuscan Raiders. Or
something. Yeah, exactly. Who were they? What was their gig?
And what was their? And that might have been their resources. Their resource was
the pass. And that's what they remember, because it was like, we get oil. Leave us the oil. That's the deal.
Mm, yeah.
So everything's all barter and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did want to know more about those guys, because this is something that she had been
working on.
Yeah,
she set this up for a while. Right. Charlize Theron's character.
Yeah. So at some point she had dealt with them before. Like, there was all kinds of sort of mystery and allure going on with all these
people.
Yeah,
and how did
people.
She contact them before and all that stuff.
I also love that he revealed little bits and pieces about the world, the people. Like, I forget which one he was from, but the guy with the big feet.
Right.
You didn't know he had those big feet until usually when they introduce a character, they would throw all that in and you would see, oh, and this guy, he's got the big feet. It wasn't until later I was like, oh, and look at his feet. Like, that was such an, but I thought it was so interesting. Like, we don't have to reveal that just yet. And it was, it just.
The metal nose is enough.
Yeah, exactly. I already had questions about the nose. Yeah. And then he opens the shot of the door and they're all shoving his feet in there. And I was just like, oh, and he's got that happening. There were just so many little things that they kept throwing in.
Great. And another thing he threw in dialogue wise, he said the mayor of, you know, Gas Town said to the mayor of Bulletville or whatever, oh, we got to deal with some family squabble. That was like, Do you remember that line?
Yeah, what?
When he starts chasing Charlize Theron and they all kind of figure out, oh, she's gone off the reservation.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, it's some family squabble. So it's like, and then you find out he captured her from the Greentown ladies or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Like,
from Green Acres.
From Green Acres. So it was like, the Green Guide letter, shout out to Steele Saunders. But like, there was all these little pieces in there that just went, man, there's all this. He gave you just enough to know there's a sordid, fucked up history.
Everywhere.
Everyone has some dirty secret to stay alive.
Yep.
Everyone, because no one had everything.
But here's why you have to do that. Because everyone who I talked to had seen the movie before I did said, yeah, it's just one long car chase. And it kind of is. Mm-hmm. That would have been, it could have been really boring. And with the action explode, with everything, it could have been really boring. And he found a way to tell a story through all of that and to drive the action, you know, let the plot drive the action. Mm-hmm. And that's why you could stay there and watch this thing. Because car chase can bore you really easily. It's not done right. And one that long.
Well, I mean, Michael Bay found a way to have giant robots fighting each other become boring.
Yeah.
What happens is it overwhelms your senses, so you have nothing emotionally to grab onto.
Yeah.
Like, and that makes the action hollow and worthless.
Well, that other car chase movie that came out last year that was based on a video game, I forget it, whatever, the guy from... Need for Speed was one of those where you're just like, I don't care how cool the car looks. I don't care. I'm just bored out of my mind. And that's why
you got to make it big, dumb fun like Fast and Furious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You either, exactly. Mm-hmm. Make it such fun with such a knowledge of how silly you are and make such a big wink.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, or make it so literally story driven, like
compelling.
Yeah,
it was so, because I had the same thing. I mean, I said it on this show.
I think story driven's a little generous, but but it's definitely action driven, but with story.
Whatever the action, however you want to say it.
Yeah,
the action, like Kevin just said, the plot drove the action. You know, or the action drove the plot. Yeah. Whatever you want to say that.
That I agree with.
That's what it wasn't just action for action's sake.
Yeah,
and. I had the same thing. I was like, 2 hours of car chases. I don't know, man. Oh, fuck, this was great.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I love the first Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love the second one too. But the one thing about the first Avengers movie, when I go back and watch it, I realize, oh, it's really just a couple of things are happening in this movie, and then we're out the door. And so it's just we get everyone to the helicarrier, and then there's some crazy shit happens, and then. That gets him into New York. Mm-hmm. Those are three very basic things happening, and it's not. There aren't a whole lot of twists and turns in the movie. I still enjoyed it. I still love it, but it kind of makes me. I think of that movie and I go, oh, all right, yeah, it's not a whole lot happening. And with this, I heard it's just one long car chase, and I was like, so shit, just one. We're just gonna be watching one thing. All right, it still was so intense and fun to watch.
Because like when the Gas City people join the chase, you learn something about that world.
Yeah.
When the bullet farmers join the chase, you learn something. I was like, you learned all of this stuff, backstory, why she's doing this, why Mad Max is involved in this, all of it you learned as the chase increased.
And you also, you get the impression too that Johnny Post-Apocalypticus is actually in charge of everything. Like, like, why else would they be joining the chase unless they were forced to and had to? Like, if they were their own city-state, like, well, it's a family squabble, you know, you fucking sort it out.
Yeah.
You know, we're growing the bullets, or we're making the gas. But, you know, the fact that they had to join means that even though these little clans are all separate and have their own armies and militias, they're all under the Citadel.
Yeah, so. And but they all need to, because if the Citadel...
Because they have the water.
They have the water. Mm-hmm. But if they don't trade, if she doesn't bring the water, they don't get oil.
Yes.
And they don't get guns, man. So it's like...
So it's
easily... that's why he had, you know, Johnny Apocalyptico had to had to join the chase. Because you got the feeling like he's not going to get in a car and drive unless she went...
Yeah.
And it was so great because, like, oh, she's going on this run. So you're like, he set, George Miller set it up. Okay, she's got to go on a run to get the gas and the bullets.
Right.
I bet you some crazy shit happens. Like, they're going to get hijacked or whatever. No, no. She just goes, detour. And you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, that was great, her, when she kept looking in the rearview mirror. Because I kept thinking.
She knew they were going to be chased eventually.
Yeah, but I also, I was thinking, like you said, oh, they're about to be hijacked. They're about to be, you know, and I really kind of bought that. And then, oh, no, 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 no. She's looking in her rearview mirror because she's about to change
shit
up. And and so the other thing is, with all the action in this movie, he found a way to do action differently. There were things we'd never seen.
We didn't rely on CG.
Well, he also didn't rely on just like these standard car chase tricks.
Yeah, it's like the shit that happens. I've never seen some guys just swinging on a pole back and forth like a pendulum. Like, who would think of that?
While something is blowing up and he slowed it down, that one scene.
And even the counterweights, too. Like, if you checked out the counterweights, they were engine blocks. So, you're like, what else would you have to use? That's what you would use.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that was interesting on the shooting is, like, they wanted to shoot in Australia, but they had so much rain that everything got green in the outback. So, they had to move the shoot to
South Africa,
where it looked a lot more desolate and bleak.
Hmm. Well, here's the other thing, too, that I loved. Like, he gets in the truck and goes, ha ha, later. And she's like, all right, let's start running after the truck. And I'm like, why would she run after the truck?
Yeah.
Because she knows the shit's going to shut down.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. Yeah. And he just shuts down. And, you know, she's just like, I know my truck. And then when he's pulling all the hidden guns out from everywhere. And I'm just like, I know she's got another one. And she knows she's got one that he's not going to find. But then some shit goes down where she needs him. And then he stays. And he's like, that unfolding. And then the... then when she needs him to drive the truck, she's like, okay, it's 1-2-1, then red and green, or whatever the button sequence to
thaw. Yeah,
the,
to 1-1-2.
Turn off the kill switch.
I forgot what it was. Because I remember sitting in the movie going,
I'm trying
when
to
I remember that, let me see. 1-1-2, and then I can't remember that. It was red, it was...
Something then red, right?
Well, we would die. We wouldn't make it.
We wouldn't be able to.
I did the same thing, though. I was like, I got to see if I can remember this shit.
And we're dead. We're just dead.
Oh, this is like Still Alice again.
The other thing cool... The engine of her big rig, Charlize Theron's rig, catches on fire. She drops the gate down to kick up the dust.
Yeah.
I was like, because they've had to deal with this in the past.
Yes.
Everything overheats in that world.
That was so
and you know what? There's plenty of dust.
Yep.
And sand. And I was like, oh, God.
That was so great. Fire out. Moving on.
Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, again, just so many details. So many. I couldn't. That would never occur to me to write that, to come up with that idea.
And close close the air intake valve or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. Driving through the scarecrow town, I like.
Oh, that was weird. Yeah.
That was the scare. Like, what were those praying mantis people?
The crow looking people.
What the fuck, that's right. That?
He drove through the.
What the fuck was that?
He drove through the set of Dark Crystal.
Yeah, that's right.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right. He drove through the set of dark. Literally.
It was so quick. I almost wondered if there was another longer scene that they were like, well, we got to cut that out. Because he drove through the stairs so quickly. And I remember just going.
Well, that's Swamp Town.
Yeah, I just turned to my friend. I go, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And then they get there and, oh, love, well, your skin's so soft. She says, you know, the older ladies say to the supermodels. And then when they find out that that was supposed to be the.
The green.
Oh, that was a bummer.
Yeah.
That was a bummer. But that, to me...
And this great thing, real quick. All that's this way is 169 miles of salt, which means that used to be an ocean.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Like, just that line told you, oh, the oceans are gone, guys. Yeah.
That just bummed me out. I was like, yeah, he said, if you keep walking that way for 160 days,
right,
it's not going to...
Nothing changes.
You're done.
It's exactly the same as day one.
I loved the night scenes because it was just such a... I mean, they're all... It's the same terrain everywhere right. You go. It's all the same. And he still found a way to, I think, keep things sort of... make them uneven a little bit in terms right. of what you were looking at, and you know, because it does slow down. It's not all one long car chase, and so there were a lot of little things in the movie that kind of took it in a slightly different direction or kind of made things kind of just nice. You know, those night scenes, they were shot really well. They didn't look. It was like it was dark, but it wasn't.
You could still
hard
see
what
was going on. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. the whole thing was shot so well. Everything just looked beautiful on the screen.
It was
in a horrifying way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, it was.
Yeah, I
even just the way a car came onto the screen, just like the way a car came in, especially at the beginning. Here they come.
Yeah.
And the car just comes into the frame. It was amazing.
And how about too, at the very end when they come back and Tom Hardy has to get out and they're all like, who is this? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And he unveils the dead body of Johnny Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And then everyone just flips out for a second. There's a second of like, oh, you killed our leader. And then everyone
went, they tear his body
apart.
Oh,
yeah, sweet. Fuck this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they tear his body up. Oh.
That was nasty. The guy who was, and again, this goes to sort of the world that they created. The guy who was in the chair, who was walking, the little person who was sitting in the chair, you see him at the beginning, yeah. and he's looking mm-hmm. through the thing. That guy, just that random person who... You know, I don't know if he was a second in command or whatever, but that guy was just, there was something about him that was just really interesting to watch, uh-huh. especially in that, the last scene where, yeah, they've revealed that the leader is dead. And I'm kind of looking at that guy. He looks like, oh, I don't know what the fuck to do now.
Right.
I didn't plan for this.
Yeah, now what?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want the binoculars? Yeah. Just like this moment where he was like, oh shit, I did not have a contingency plan when I came into this job, you know.
And the great thing was, the minute they find out...
I should have kept drumming.
The breastfeed women, they just say, fuck it, we're turning the water on.
Yeah.
It wasn't Charlize Theron's big moment.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just everyone just went...
Well, I mean, that's the great thing about this movie, is it gave everybody a chance to kind of do a thing. Right. And it wasn't... I think sometimes a movie can fail when everything is beholden to one. This is our guy. This is the main,
right.
you know, so we have to have him do everything. Everybody got to kind of kick ass or turn the plot in a way, you know, and that was kind of an exciting thing to watch. Because you didn't know who was going to do what. You didn't know who was going to die.
You just answered it right there. It is such a you paint a film into such a corner when one person has to,
yeah.
you know, Mad Max has to run up the stairs and turn the water on, mm-hmm. let my people go. Like, yeah. oh, fuck. Like, that would have, but the fact that George Miller let all these people do their shit,
mm-hmm.
man.
Yeah. I mean, the pregnant girl dying, I didn't see that coming.
No.
Oh, God. I know. Like, she's going to bring new life to the, no, she died, and that was horrible how she was treated. And he's like, it would have been a bloke or whatever the guy says, and just chucks the baby. Oh,
that is a thing though, that because I think in the hands of a lesser director, that would have just been the end of it. It would have been kind of just a device to go, oh, wasn't this some horrible shit? Mm-hmm. But the fact that they go back to her and they do the whole thing with the baby, and you just see, you get to see more into how horrible these people are.
Right.
Like, cut the kid out. Let me see who it would have been, you know. And then that goes to the other guy who I was going to have a little brother. That dude, like, you got just, there were so many little things that were character moments that I thought were really cool. Like that guy getting excited that we didn't need to see that guy.
Right.
Who gives a shit, really? But it was still interesting, and it still was like, oh, that's cool. Like, what's his story? What's the deal? What are those
things on his back that he's wearing?
Spraying themselves with silver paint, going, I'm going to go to Valhalla.
Yeah, that was... Like, they never explained it. They just did it, and you figured, okay, I get what that means.
This is what was so brilliant. They just gave you enough, because I just went, oh, that's his, he's using some crazy religion to control these guys.
It's a blessing. The spray paint is a blessing.
You're going to go see your virgins or whatever. Like, he just tricking them.
They don't have to set it up. They don't have to explain it. They just, you see it, and you're, okay, I know what's going on there. The I loved the moment when the girl is, she's praying. And the girl is sitting there, and she's doing her own little prayer. Right. She got the hand things, and I've never heard of that. Whatever she was doing, I was like, well, I can't. I don't know. Buddhism, is it? Yeah. Islam, is it? Who prays like that? I don't know. But I just love the fact that either she made this choice, or the director said, "We want you to. You got to do something." Her prayer wasn't just, I'm just going to sit here and pray quietly. She had a whole thing going on. Like, everything was a story. Every story sort of fed and made this world grow.
Exactly. And that's exactly because you sit there, well, what would have carried over? And how would it have carried over from civilization?
Yeah. Right. And how would it be used? That's really, everything becomes either a vehicle or a weapon. And that's really, every piece of technology either became a vehicle or a weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what would religion look like?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be some weird patchwork.
It'd be scary.
It would be used like Book of Eli. Just the only purpose for it would be to control you.
Right, or like if you go to the original Planet of the Apes, you know, and they're like the ancient sacred scrolls or whatever that they use. That's what survived the atomic holocaust, and this is what made the, you know. And Charlton Heston going, "Ape evolved from man. It doesn't make sense," or whatever like that whole thing. But it's like, oh, that's probably what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are we using that's from 3,000 years ago or whatever that is not even close to what its original form is?
Mm-hmm.
And also, which you could make that. I'm sure this is George Miller was intentional of, like, you know, this is what Jesus said, or this is what, you know, Allah said, or Muhammad said, or whatever. Yeah. And it's so different from what actually might have happened. So that's what he's saying, is like, we're going to just, this is what made it through this apocalypse, is these weird Valhalla pray things.
And because, you know, everything from Norse mythology.
That was weird. Valhalla.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Valhalla, and I spray their paint, because it's like...
Because they're Valkyries, basically. And that's kind of, that was the kind of the metaphor there, where the warriors, when they would die in battle, would go to Valhalla. So that's probably the part of, you know, mythology and religions that they took. They're like, well, this fits the exact scenario. You know, the Vikings never mentioned spray paint. But but they put it all together in like this mishmash.
But that's what made sense to me is the Mordek and Joe or whatever. Yeah. That what I just, you know, extrapolated from that was, oh God, I bet you he just found six cases of spray paint. Went, all right, I'm just going to use this as something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is how I'm going to manipulate these idiots. Yeah. Spray your mouth and meet Valhalla. Yeah. All right, you know.
It was just such a weird...
Most likely it'll have lead in it and kill you faster.
That's what I kept thinking, too. I was like, oh boy, they don't know that that's not good for them.
Yeah.
These guys with loiters right on 100-mile-an-hour trucks.
I don't think that's safe at all, fellas.
Really, brush your teeth.
Paint down quickly.
All right. Well, anything else we want to discuss?
I think we covered it fairly well. I will say that it makes me want to go back and see the first two movies again. Not necessarily the third one, but definitely the first two.
I got the feeling like there was no reference to Thunderdome. Was I wrong?
You know what? I think I'm not sure, because everything happened kind of quickly. I would have to ask the fans if there was any Thunderdome-specific references.
I've never seen Thunderdome. I know I saw The Road Warrior a long time ago, but I don't remember it at all. I saw it on TV or something like that. And I've never seen the original Mad Max. That's one of those movies I'd be like, I need to go see that, because The Road Warrior was good, and I need to... But I want to go back and watch all of them now.
I think that I want to do the same. I'm going to watch Road Warrior, Mad Max. I might even watch Thunderdome, and then I want to see this one in the theater again.
And this is the fan question from the episode. Tweet or write on the Facebook fan page or in the message boards. Was there any specific Easter eggs for Thunderdome in the film?
Yeah. Let us know.
Oh. I mean, Tina Turner was in the movie. Did you see
that? Oh, I forgot about that.
She was the one.
And there was an actual Thunderdome in the movie.
But That would be great. There's just one shot. They drive past, down the desert, yeah, and they pass Thunderdome. It's like, yeah, like when you pass Las Vegas. That would be so awesome. You know, now playing Tina Turner and just her picture on a billboard. Like,
oh. Or his map that he made with blood. You just see off to the side Thunderdome. It's like, yeah, we can't go that way.
On his map. Oh, boy.
And then just like a subway sign.
Awesome.
I had to get some product placement. Awesome. Well, that was a fucking righteous.
Yeah, you guys asked for it.
Dude, thank you for emailing us and saying you're going to be in
LA.
Sure.
Please,
and I'm suggesting this because you were like, are we going to do Mad Max? I was like, oh, God, let me check when it comes out.
Yeah, I think we have to.
I was like, oh, man.
When I realized, wait, this is right when Mad Max comes out. I got it. We have to talk about it.
And I'm so glad it was this good.
Yes.
I was so worried.
It would have been a more painful spoiler rep if it wasn't.
Have you done a spoiler rep where it's just a really bad movie or a movie you just didn't enjoy at all?
Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah. I never saw that.
We had to tear that. Pat Francis emailed us and was like, oh, we got to tear this fucking movie apart. Like, he was so mad. Because I think he was a big Lone Ranger fan as a kid.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And so he was like, we got to go after this one. Pacific Rim, we thought was going to be kind of bad.
But yeah, it ended up being okay.
And it'd be great. And Will Anderson was
And that
in,
was one we lost. We lost, but then a fan recovered it for us.
Yes.
Hey, who's that fan? Because I need to talk to you.
Well, how can people reach you online, Kevin Avery, to rescue your episode?
Well, they can find me at Kevin Avery on Twitter. And I don't know. That's good enough,
okay.
I guess. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Know.
And then your podcast?
Podcast, Denzel Washington's Greatest Actor of All Time, period. We're on iTunes. We're on Wolfpop page somewhere. I don't know.
How right.
But, which
is part of Earwolf.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're on Tumblr, our little site is Denzel is the greatest. So, or at Denzel is the greatest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have it. Someone, is this you guys who did the, there's a Twitter handle that's at Denzelitz?
So a fan created this at Denzelitz because the hashtag was Denzelitz. That's what we call our fans. And someone just created like an at Denzelitz, Twitter handle. And if we tweet something and she picks it up and it's new, she sort of sends it out to fans and stuff like that. And there was another guy, Igor Rusinov, who created like a Denzel Washington, like a Denzelitz website. And I wish the website has some funky name, so I can't remember what the thing is. But I could send you guys the link or something like that. But it's... our fans are great, and they're doing all kinds of shit for us, and it's kind of really cool. And
if you guys want to see them live, they will be at the Los Angeles Podcast Festival September 18th through the 20th.
That's right.
So go to lapodfest.com, get your tickets. This festival is going to be awesome.
Yeah,
this
festival really is
going to be awesome.
Can't wait to lose all those episodes.
No, well, our people will record it.
Yes.
And then delete it.
But we'll lose episodes. Yeah, you'll lose episodes that you've already recorded like a year ago.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. We got some NSA shit.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. As someone posted online, it's spoiler rep season.
It really
because
is.
Because this
the
is
summer movies.
The summer movies. So
it's a beautiful thing.
So gorgeous. Maybe we'll try to get a Tomorrowland one up next week if we can.
Is that out next week?
Be great.
Yeah, the 22nd. So.
All right.
So, all right, guys. Thank you so much. Kevin Avery, thank you for
having me.
Coming through Los Angeles on a hiatus from the John Oliver Show. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember...
Han shot first.
Rockatansky.
What?
That's Max's.